happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage, Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time, Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough, and last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that's John Rauhouse playing in the background. If you've been to our site recently, it has been overtaken by something called FJ Fest. This is our homespun guitar festival, music festival, where we are inviting folks in our community, luthiers who've been in the magazine or just luthiers that have been on our radar, collectors and players, to submit videos and behind the scenes shop tours, show off your guitars, and let us all be a little bit connected right now. John has submitted a video that you should all go check out. He is playing his Stephen Stratton built Archtop guitar, and it is a thing of beauty. And if you are into retro looking Archtop guitars, you should definitely check out Stratton Instruments. So like a lot of you, I'm trying to keep the work fires going, keeping the magazine going, keeping the podcast going. I'm trying to now teach my son all the stuff he should be learning in his classroom but can't. I'm trying to keep my sanity, and I am probably staring at my phone way too much. Not a lot of good happens from staring at your phone too much. Your hand cramps up, you get dejected, you read some bummer news article or read a comment from someone you thought was a friend who turned out to have the totally opposing view of you. You name it, a lot of things to depress you on your phone. But occasionally you stumble upon something that puts a smile to your face, and that's how this week's podcast happened. I was going through Instagram, and I noticed that the guitar maker Rachel Rosenkrantz had what I thought originally was a guitar form, but it was a ukulele form, and she had mushrooms growing in it. She is attempting, as we speak, to make an instrument out of mushrooms. I love a good experiment as much as anyone. I love hearing stories like this. I immediately reached out to her and wanted to hear more. She is someone who has been on we've featured her before. We did a bench press column on her on fretboardjournal.com a few years ago. But Rachel is somebody who is thinking, I can't even say alternative woods. She's thinking beyond woods for her instruments. And she's doing it in such a clever and creative way. I wanted to hear more. And so that is how this podcast came to be. We cover a lot more than just mushrooms, folks. She's up to a lot of interesting stuff. She's also a design teacher. So she has lots of good food for thought. And I think you will get a kick out of this podcast. As always, the Fretboard Journal podcast happens in part due to a couple of sponsors that we truly love and want you to love. Monocreators.com is their website. Makes an entire range of gig bags and laptop bags and pedal board bags that are all indestructible and so ergonomic and well thought out. If you are not shopping for a gig bag right now because there are no gigs, I should remind you that if you have two or more pedals, now is the perfect time to finally get those things locked down into a pedal board that makes sense and won't have you tripping over any cables. And Mono makes some very cool pedal boards. So check them out at monocreators.com. Our other sponsor is our friends over in New York City at Retrofret Vintage Guitars. Their physical showroom may be closed, as every physical showroom is right now, it seems, but they continue to add to their inventory every single day, it seems, and they are still shipping guitars, and boy, do they have some cool ones right now. They've got, like, usually I highlight, like, three guitars. I'm just going to highlight one right now because it is so damn cool. They have a 1947 Martin 00021 that looks like it's been to hell and back. This thing looks like it has been played so much. Remember Glenn Hansard in the movie Once? Remember Trigger? Not quite there, but getting there. And this guitar commands attention. And you know what? Without fail, whenever I see a guitar that has been played this much, it usually sounds fantastic. This one has had a couple replaced bridges, but it's got the Brazilian rosewood, folks. It is a rare guitar, 1947 00021. Tons of scratches, tons of dings. but it commands attention, and I imagine it sounds fantastic. And to get a vintage Brazilian Rosewood Martin or any guitar for $6,500 plus shipping is quite a deal these days. So check that thing out. Even if you're not in the market for guitars, check it out, because it is a beautiful beast of a guitar. I hate to use the word mojo, but it's got mojo if you use that term to describe such things. Go to retrofret.com. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. As I said before, we have all sorts of cool content on our website right now under the hashtag FJFest. Go poke around there. You'll find interviews with TJ Thompson giving us a shop tour. You'll find Peggy White. You'll find Retrograde Guitars, all these cool builders and makers that maybe you've only heard about or seen a couple pictures of or maybe met at a guitar show. They're all letting you into their homes, basically, and showing you how the sausage gets made, which is pretty damn cool. And it's only on our website. So go check that out. And as always, as I say every week, if you like what we're up to, if you love guitars, if you love that we're providing a voice for a lot of these makers and players out there and maybe turning you on to some things that you didn't know about, we would love your support. And the easiest way to do it and the cheapest way is just to get a digital subscription to the Fretboard Journal magazine itself. We take PayPal now. You can go to our website. It's $30 no matter where in the world you are. And we will send you two of our most recent issues immediately, and then you'll get the next four that we put out. And we are still, of course, putting out issues. We've got our Electric Guitar Annual finally off to press. It's going to get printed and produced and mailed soon to folks who pre-ordered it. And then we are already hard at work on issue 46, which looks incredible. And we're going to keep plugging along as we do. This is our livelihood. So we would love it if you'd support us. We're a reader-supported magazine, so you guys really power this magazine in ways that you may not even imagine. So here's my conversation with Rachel. I'll include a link in the show notes to her Instagram so you can see just what the heck we're talking about. But this was a super fun conversation and kind of just what the doctor ordered, so I hope you enjoy it. So Rachel, like everybody else in the world, my thumb is hurting because I just scroll Instagram and Facebook all day because we're all staying at home. And last week, I saw one of the most interesting things I've seen in a while, which was, you're making an instrument out of a mushroom?
Yes. I've built beehives with that material before. So I've been working for the last 2 years a lot. So I've been a luthier for 10 years and trained on classical guitar, mostly making parlors, but I also teach design. And because of my design teaching, I'm very intrigued by alternative materials and sustainability. And I've been exploring materials that can maybe be an alternative for some woods there's a lot of species of woods we cannot use anymore, and that this is going to increase if we're not careful. So what's the guitar going to look like in 20 years, you know, or something like that? So there's, I've been working lately on so that mushroom is it's very structural. It doesn't withstand as much tension as a quarter sawn would do. So I'm going to do first a test with a small ukulele because that's about the amount I grew. And what you see on the picture is the corn husks and farm waste before the mushroom grows. And the mushroom will take all the empty space between those fibers, and those become more structural. I'm going to, my goal is to make a Mikocaster. it's an electric with a through neck in the body, so it can withstand, the neck will hold the tension. And I'm working on a mold to grow a bigger batch to make one like that. So there's, I've seen chairs made like that. I've built beehive with that material. It has a lot of potential. I'm talking with one of the company that produces it in upstate New York to see if instead of short to cut in very small pieces all the fibers, if they can live long strands. So I can maybe weave and have a more stable structure within the growth. But it's not the only sustainable material I'm experimenting with. I've been also growing vegan leather out of kombucha scoby as a replacement for banjo drums. I've been also working with a beehive. I'm a beekeeper, and last year I put a guitar mold inside the hive for them to fill up, like nature's 3D printer. Uh-huh. So yeah, I've been experimenting, which is fun too.
You have been experimenting. So a beehive, I get. Kombucha, you just stick in your refrigerator and it grows, kind of maybe roughly in the shape of a banjo. How do you get a mushroom to grow in the shape of a ukulele? Do they just grow anywhere?
So you have to control the form in which it's growing. So you have to make a mold for it to dictate where to stop to grow. I can show you a picture of a bag before the growth and a chunk after the growth. Via text, if you want.
I would love to see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. I probably consume more mushrooms than 99% of our listeners, and I know near our neck of the woods, Paul Stamets is a big mycologist guy who lectures and does TED talks and everything. But I had never known that you could kind of harvest a mushroom easily in whatever shape you want, as long as there's a mold around it. That's interesting.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this type of mushroom is originally the application for it was for packing in shipping boxes. So IKEA was one of the first company using that method to replace polystyrene to protect their furniture when they were shipping stuff. And I know that polystyrene has a great acoustic property. There've been like amazing cellos made from styrofoam. So, if it's nature's styrofoam, let's test the acoustic property of that as well. I've tried on small parts that I grew, but I cannot tell yet how effective it is. But as far as the structure, it's still... there's enough potential to like try. I'd rather try and have it fail than not try and just guessing.
Yeah.
Because then I can always find the next round to make it better, which is why I'm first starting with just a uke. With a uke, I will know enough of try and errors to then make it better when I make the next round with.
Got it.
Basically, the uke is more of the prototype.
So have any of these experiments, the banjo skin, the beehive, have any of them been promising to date, or have any of them yielded an instrument?
The banjo skin, I grew also like smaller parts,
mm-hmm.
and right now I'm doing some tension tests, and I grew them in 4 different thicknesses, and I have one that's pretty promising. So 3 weeks to 4 weeks of kombucha growth, with a one-week method of drying, behaves very much like goat skin. So now it's just I need to get a vat to make one bigger. The beehive one is purely for the sculptural joy of it. It's just for purely artistic project. But the mushroom, definitely, that's something I want to produce. I already made 3 guitar necks, and 1 base neck, through neck for that. And now that I built my own CNC machine, and now that we're all staying home, I'm finally going to have the time to actually learn how to use it, and I'm going to crank some mold, like probably in the next 2 weeks.
Okay. What kind of mushroom is this?
So I'm using the type that's grown by a company called Ecovative. And they say it's a mycelium mushroom, like not all mushroom mycelium.
Okay.
Right? So they use the structure of that mushroom to make different biocomposites. Some that would be for the food industry, having mushroom replacing like incredible burgers, or they will have those like the one I'm using to be able to design whatever you want if you're a maker. They have some others that are more towards the bioplastics, mixing mushroom and algae where you can make kitchen tiles. So there's already real application in the world for the last 5 years that I've seen that, okay, I could see an instrument also application in there.
All right.
And so it's not too like crazy in the sense that I have no idea what I'm doing. Like I've experimented with it for over a year, and I had a beehive that was pretty successful with it. Built the domes. I've seen other structures. At school, some students built a whole chair with it, and it withstand like a good weight.
Fascinating.
The thing is, it takes time to grow. But on the other hand, it will take maybe like 3 weeks or a month to grow, and boom, you have a guitar. Whereas how long it takes for a tree to grow to become a guitar. And you see what I'm...
Well, of course, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
But this is, to be clear, this is not a mushroom that if you go walk out in the forest, you're necessarily going to stumble upon. This is something that a company is. I mean, it's not. Is it genetically modified?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
They're just farming that strand that will be having the perfect density for that. So once you grow it in the shape you want for a while. You bake it for a half hour, and then it's robust, and it will stop the growth.
Wild.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. There's a company, a woman designer in New York, who makes lampshades.
Okay.
With them. It's pretty beautiful. It has a rustic look, for sure. I mean, Phil is very honest about what it is. but it's also appealing because of that. So, yeah, it's been fun playing with things that are maybe a bit different than maple sometimes.
Yeah.
You'll build more traditional guitars, you know.
Is this thing going to be super light?
Yes. So I'm hoping that actually the sound will travel through the thickness of the material. So my goal is to make a solid body that once unplugged can still resonate enough to not be like a hollow body, but still maybe less quiet than an unplugged electric.
Okay, sure.
That's what I'm testing. So right now the ukulele, I hope that in the next 10 days I'm going to be able to do that test.
Okay, cool. And the mushroom guitar would be, you said, like a neck through Telecaster, so like a Stratotone almost, or Telecaster?
So it's the same piece of wood that's really goes through the neck. So the tension is not all on the mushroom.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just to be safe at first.
Got it. Okay. So
yeah.
We just launched into all of your mad science experiments. When did you start guitar making? Let's go back a little bit.
There's two steps. Once when I was a student back in 1990, so I've been playing classical guitar since I was a kid. I went to design school, and on my way to school in Paris, yeah, that's not a Rhode Island accent you hear, in case you wondered. So I was walking by the Atelier Maurice Dupont, the Gypsy Jazz studio. I was on my way to take the bus to go to school, and so I could see already in the window the progress of every guitar. And I said, oh my God, maybe I can find an internship or an apprenticeship. And when I asked at the time, they say, well, no, you're too old. At the time, I was 21. I'm like, what? So back home in France, if you want to start to be a guitar maker, you start like at 14. It's really vocational. It's still very much that way, unless you go to a school that's specialized for that. But their logic was why someone in a good art school will take the spot of a kid that might not make it to high school.
Mm-hmm.
So they were giving the priorities, which, you know, once explained, yeah, it makes sense. Then, well, studied design, had less time to play music. And I went actually in more architectural and industrial design career in the lighting industry. And I was just missing playing music. Started to, like 12 years later, started to be in the music scene again, playing with bands, and just like was tired of the gray cubicle corporate environment I was in at Philips Electronics. Even though the design was interesting there, I just wanted to, build guitars again. That the idea came back. I'm like, why it's like being a musician or being a designer? This discipline combines both.
Sure.
And I found someone in Rhode Island near Newport that gave me an old school one-on-one apprenticeship. And I really enjoyed it. His name is Daniel Collins, and he started a guitar school there, a guitar making school, Shady Lane.
Okay.
It's also known now under the name of the Pump House. And I started to be there, but the commute was a bit far, and there were just too many people in the woodshop. I like to work alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to a woodshop a bit closer to where I live in Providence. And I shared shop for a while with Otto D'Ambrosio,
mm-hmm.
like archtop guitars. And it was really nice to work with somebody who had that much experience as him, because I learned a lot. And but they moved to the West Coast. But what they allowed is like, hey, you need all my machines? I'm like, yeah. So that facilitated my being independent as a luthier, because now I have his drill press, I have his bandsaw, I have, you know, you couldn't move them west. So that was a perfect transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been completely by myself since as a maker. I would say 2014.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know you started with nylon string guitars, and that was your first love. What are you primarily selling these days?
Parlors.
Parlors.
Parlors, that's mostly what I love parlors, so that's mostly what I built. I really fell in love with them because it's funny, but every time somebody knocked on the door for a repair, it was, I found this in my grandmother's basement. Oh, we were cleaning my grandfather's attic and we found this. And all those 1910, 1920s guitars are like coming back to the surface. And a lot of them are parlors. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like so sweet and elegant and ergonomically more comfortable. The scale is shorter. I find it less hard on the hand. I really fell in love with that type of guitar. So I started to build those. And I don't know about your region, but in New England, there's a lot of singer-songwriter that mostly are solo artists. And that, I think, is a good instrument for musicians that play alone. So that's pretty much what I built or focus on. Very few electrics. I have more fun building acoustics. It's more.
Yeah. When did you care deeply about the environment, you're working with not only sustainable woods, but some non-wood alternatives. When did that come into play? Has that always been a part of your life?
I think it's been always part of my life in the way that when I was, before I became a luthier, I was already focusing on that in my industrial design days at Philips Electronics. Around 2007, 2008, we were, when I joined there, we were very focusing on the energy efficiency with the LED light revolution. So these have been always around, but the, to make room in the everybody's life, you know, like that wave was mostly done then. So, yeah, that was very important then. It was always like, how can we make it more green? How can we make it more efficient? How can we make it lose less wattage? And so that was already something we were cautious about and start to see, all right, if we make it in aluminum, it's 99% recyclable. So maybe that's better than using parts in plastic. It was something that already before the guitar making was on my mind. So when I joined the luthiery world, I still kept that hat on. So when you hear, oh, maybe we should not use that much rosewood, or maybe we should be careful with ebony, so, okay, well, immediately my mind was like, oh, what else can we use instead of just hoarding on all the ebony I could at that time. I heard that, you know. So I don't know. I think when you're a designer, you're trained since school and through your career to be a problem solver. So I think immediately you want to be part of the solution more than the problem. It's not something you're forced to think about. It's just something that's already built in. So maybe there was an advantage to have that education and that experience before luthiery to be able to see that.
So it's more, you're coming at it more from a scientist problem solver perspective than fighting for the environment, perhaps. Or is they, are they equal?
I see them both together. Yeah. They also come from an artistic background. So you mix those three together. I don't know how you can label that.
Yeah. The Venn diagram. You actually said something in an interview that we did with you for a bench press that I had never even contemplated. And I consider myself to be environmentally savvy, like a lot of people. Most people view sinker rosewood, sinker woods as sort of this environmental boon of like you're taking this old growth wood that otherwise would never have been used and not cutting down a new tree. And you brought up the point of actually disturbing the water, which I had never even thought about. So.
Yeah, it's not so much like just about the tree, but what's all the world around the tree. Mm-hmm. The tree is just bigger than itself.
You said you teach design now. What sort of design are you teaching?
So I teach first-year students at the Rhode Island School of Design. Mm-hmm.
And that's the full gamut just like design 101, or do you have a specialty?
I have a specialty. So the first-year students, they are not yet in their major. So on the first year, they have to be exposed to a little bit of everything before they jump into what will be their main discipline. So they must take drawing. They must take design, meaning 2D. That's also another name that people use, meaning color theory, composition theory. And then they have to take spatial design, which is what I teach. And basically, that's introduction to structure, architecture, furniture, ergonomics, understanding material property. So that is basically, I teach everything that's not flat for their introduction. So that's like if there are students who will go in architecture or in furniture making or in sculpture, they have to start with my class. And I always have them at the end of the semester make instruments, because I think that's like the perfect assignment that force them to use structure and sculpture and ergonomics and joinery, because they have to manage tension. So it's always fun towards the end of the year. I mean, except for this year, because we all teach online now since campuses have closed, which is a bit more challenging for them to do that assignment. But so, yeah, that's what I teach.
That's amazing. So do they have a workshop at the school where they can construct these things, or do they have to go home?
Oh, yes. And,
yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, they have that on campus. The wood shop is very, it's a perfect wood shop. And they also have a toolbox, and we, and for the tools they don't have, we have a communal tool closet that has all the chisels and gouges. So that's I could not teach that class if RISD didn't provide all those amazing facilities.
Have any of the students come up with interesting instruments?
Some wants to build like the perfect classical guitar, but like most of them just want to try to invent something that doesn't exist and make a hybrid. It's really fun. Some made like a harpsichord to play with feet. Some made. There's one student that made a beautiful bass and guitar hybrid last semester, and some were trying to play with clay and resonance and ceramic for guitars. Oh, that's another thing I didn't mention. I'm making a resonator out of ceramic.
Okay. We're all dealing with this quarantine in different ways. I want to hear about this.
Well, the thing is, like, what else in wood can resonate? I'm like, the thing is, I'm tired to see resonators that look like pasta strainer.
Uh-huh.
We can make so much cooler pattern that the pasta strainer holds. Like, well, and I was doing my dishes, and I was washing a bowl, and the bowl knocked on, like, some spoon and resonated. I'm like, oh, my God, what if a resonator could be made out of, like, porcelain? So that's also like, my wood shop looks really strange right now.
I bet it doesn't look like a wood shop at all. It looks like a nursery, it sounds
like. No, there's an art shop in the works. I have a parlor. I have also like I have a 9-string baritone, that's almost done. And I have like 4 instruments that are pretty traditional, hanging on the wall, that's almost done. I have a little hauser also that I just started. It's just making room for the crazy stuff, you know, the recreational thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you were visited by Anthony Bourdain, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
How did that come to be?
That was fun. That was, so you know, it's because of the bench press stuff. The person that was in charge of the managing the team of that TV show saw the bench press.
The Fretboard Journal thing online?
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea.
So when they all met on, like, I don't know, like their team meeting, I don't know if it's the Monday morning or whatever, and they were looking at who would be potentially in the episode, somebody say, oh, I read this thing about this girl in Rhode Island. That could be a good fit. And then the sound engineer there said, oh, are you talking about my friend Rochelle? Because that guy used to be in Rhode Island. We used to play music together. So, yeah, she's cool. So they definitely like, all right, 2 people say, like, this person might be interesting. Let's call that person. So I was on the phone with them. Then they said, all right, we are looking at about 18 people for the next episode. We're going to keep calling you every Friday until we see if you make the cut. And so for 3 weeks, we talk every Friday on the phone. Say, all right, now we're down to 5 people and down to 3 people. And and got a phone call say, all right, we're going to work with you on the next episode. How about in 2 weeks? Like, what? So I'm like in my head, like, what can I show in 2 weeks? Like when you know how long it takes to build a guitar.
Sure.
It's, yeah, it's pretty wild. So I did a lot of all-nighters. I did ask a customer of mine, say, can I borrow the Hauser I built for you? So I can have that already like done for the show. And then so I was focusing for those 2 weeks, making all the parts that would be all the steps to lead to the finished one. Because there's no way in 2 weeks I could make a whole finished one that would actually sound good, because the one I built for my customer was already 3 years old. So it was already like more opened and so yeah. And the filming happened on 2 days and it was such a blast. It really was. It was a very fun team. He was in real life, just like the way he's on TV. Like what you see is what you get.
Sure.
Yeah. And I had the best food catered to my house for lunch and dinner. It was just like, oh yeah. I still like look back and say, did that really happen?
There's video proof, but yeah.
Yeah.
So when they were calling you every Friday, were they also like interviewing you, auditioning you, or were they just letting you know whether or not it was going to happen?
No, they were still asking to see if I would be the right fit. I'm sure they interviewed a lot of other people that, I don't know, I think they were asking somebody that was a surfboard maker. And so they were looking at radically different disciplines mm-hmm. among those 18 people. So, yeah, and if it didn't happen, it would have been like pretty nice to have been considered in flattering. It's like, all right, I'm not a schmuck. Good.
You're not, no. When something like that happens, do you see an uptick of orders from people who would have never heard about you otherwise? Or?
Well, you know, that's interesting because I have a friend in France I went to school with. She's a lacquer artist and a stained glass artist. And she had a similar experience on French TV, and she called me and said, make sure you clear your bench, that you be ready because order, like, just roll in. Like, I had enough business for 2 years. And, like, wow, cool. And the TV show happened, and it didn't actually happen that way. I was just like, huh, I'm curious, because they were over, like, a 1 million view on YouTube. People started to reach out maybe 2 years after the show. So I think what happened is people were watching the show because they are foodies or they are fans of him. So that's the audience. And they were just like, oh, probably like interested in what was shown, but it was not necessarily the audience that are guitar aficionados that would follow that show first. Mm-hmm. So I think it took a while to make its way in, but it did bring some work, definitely. But what it helped is, as I started luthiery later in life than most luthiers, it helped also in my among my peers to actually know me. So that facilitated that to like put my name out there on the map in my discipline.
Got it.
I mean, the following year I was showing at Woodstock, so that helped also in that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you have a segment of customers? Obviously, you said you're selling a lot of parlor guitars. Do you have a segment of customers who have already bought in and want to sign up for these more experimental creations you've been talking about?
Well, right now, the one I'm finishing, that's a 9-string guitar.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to Marfa, and it's using fish skin instead of plastic. And I've done that before. I sold a parlor guitar at Woodstock. the Lou Fury show, and that one was already using fish skin instead of plastic. Again, for sustainability. So there's already like some of that going on. I had customer reaching out also for things that are not really guitars, but because they've seen the experimental stuff, they asked me to, they see that I could be the right fit to try weird instruments. One I'm working on for a flute player is an acoustic amplifier that's pretty similar to the Pab Martineau that was built in the early 50s.
Okay.
So basically, you have 100 string in a box, and you basically have a pickup in it, and you play an instrument in a microphone, and the signal is sent inside the box. And like a sitar, the strings that will vibrate at the right frequency will start to be activated. So it's like a acoustic delay.
Okay.
If you remember the album Kid A by Radiohead?
Yes, of course, yes.
All the vocals were done through a Pab Martineau. So basically, it's a box that resonates and gives sustain by having sympathetic strings in a box that has a shape that is conducive to resonance.
Wow.
So that would give it kind of magic halo. Around with no electronics except that, the signal is exaggerated electric through vibration through the mic going directly in that box. I would say I'll send you more images. You know, you should send me your email and I will send you links of what I've been talking about, so you have a visual for the mushroom and for the Pab Martineau.
People will want to see this stuff. Do you enjoy the electronics work as much as the hands-on woodworking side of things?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I learned how to build circuitry when I was in the lighting world, doing circuitry for prototypes when we were doing lighting. So now I'm using that a lot of that knowledge when solder circuitry for the pickups and all that stuff. But my ex-husband plays electronic music. So I've been also enjoying playing electronic music and play with all those gears for a while. He used to work for Newmark, which is also the company for Akai and a lot of electronic equipment. So often at home, I would say like 10 years ago, we were kind of the guinea pigs playing with the prototypes of what was coming up with those electronic gears. So it was interesting to like while I was learning how to build the Hauser, on the same time at home, I was playing with prototyping of, the next synth and, and like pad controls.
Amazing.
I would love to make a guitar, and I think this I need to take some Arduino class, which we have at school, so I think I should take those class. I would love to make a fingerboard that also reacts like a synth when you touch each fret. So not only you hear the guitar acoustically, but what you're doing also on the neck, the pressure can trigger electronically also something.
Oh, wow.
And then the markers are not just markers. They actually have another function than just indicating the harmonics. And actually, maybe that's a way to have some effects. I don't know yet, but it's not impossible. So let's... it's just not enough time. Oh, you want to hear another funny one?
Sure.
This woman in Brazil, she makes amazing tilapia leather. So
out of the fish?
So there's a fish farm near her.
Okay.
And she saw that there were so many like fish skins thrown away. She's like, oh my God, I should totally start a leather business. And so I'm going to make guitar straps out of fish leather. And they're beautiful, and all the dyes are vegetable dyes. Very beautiful and very robust. And but the fish skin I'm using to replace plastic, that is a different type of fish. I'm using shagreen. It's the name for stingray fish. And there are so many bumps and scales on it that when you sand it down, it's stronger than your own nails. It's stronger than plastic, but it's still very flexible. So what it does is that pick guard follows the stretch of the wood and not adding any stress while it's still very tough and protecting it. And it looks cool.
Yeah. Why are people eating stingrays? Forgive me for asking these dumb questions. Why is there so much stingray to even work with?
Yeah, the same skin as like skates, and skates is edible.
Okay.
And it's not endangered, so I don't feel too bad to use that. And I use like very small parts, so that's more like, yeah.
But these are just readily available to you, and they were going to get thrown away or composted or something?
I think people don't throw them away because there's already like in wallets and watchmaking.
Okay.
And also sword handles, traditional Japanese swords. The handles are made with those. It's like a very good grip material.
Sure.
So it's not discarded just like tilapia, where tilapia people overlook. And but it's I'm shocked to see how robust skin fish is, because when I remove the skin of a fish when I cook, it really doesn't feel like that's the case. It tears apart fairly easily. But I don't know, once it's like used, treated the right way, it's incredibly strong. I don't know what they do to it, but it's working.
Just to remind folks that are listening, you do make traditional guitars with wood.
Yes. So right now, I have an arch top with figured maple. I have the back and sides made. I'm halfway through the neck. I started to cut the fingerboard. The soundboard. I'm on my second one. I messed up the first one, but the second one is well in its way. And that is in spruce. I have a parlor and using the last piece of Thinkered wood I have, because I'm not buying more, as you know, with Indian rosewood side and back, quilted maple pickguard and rosette, and also Indian rosewood fingerboard. I have mahogany neck, and I'm using also curly maple around for the purfling and binding. And I have a elbow rest, the ergonomic sleeve.
The armrest?
The armrest, thank you. I still need the a second coffee. And that one has a fixed bridge. I'll show you pictures of that one too.
Out of all of these materials that we've talked about, do you have, for say, a parlor guitar, do you have a favorite combination that you would work with?
Oh, yeah. I love rosewood and cedar together. It's still the sweetest. I did work on a parlor with some Kiat, and I loved it, and I'm looking forward to use that wood again. It's a small tree in South Africa that looks like a blonder mahogany.
Okay.
Can I make a big guitar out of it because it's a shrubbery? Is that the word in English?
Sure.
Like a small tree.
Yeah.
But it makes a fruit or that's not edible. So what's the point of the tree? And this one, there's no lack of. And it is so pleasant to work with. And it sounds like mahogany and it behaves like mahogany. And it's just more pale, more blonde, and a bit more ashy. It's very pretty. I used it on a parlor that was very close silhouette to a Martin parlor, and I was very happy with the projection of what this would.
Is that easy to get wood?
It's not as uncommon. It's easier now than it was 6 years ago when I tried it.
Got it.
And I tried it just because one of my guitar maker friends had it, said, I don't know what it is, I don't know what to use it for. Say, I'll grab it, but this looks good. And then I started to research a bit into it, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to use that.
Cool.
And a 9-string guitar is using cedar, Indian rosewood, abalone, a lot of abalone, floating a bridge, like a giant mustache style. The guitar has F holes. It's using also some of that fish skin as a tailpiece, pickup built in at the end of the fingerboard. But this one has two controls and two, so it has a humbucker pickup at the end of the fingerboard, but also some transducers underneath the bridge. So you can choose if you want more of the sound of the bridge location or the fingerboard area, and you can adjust that. So this one is electroacoustic.
Yeah. The one commonality here amongst all these different things you talked about is they're all organic. Do you want to work with synthetic materials too, like carbon fiber, or is this not interesting to you?
So, no, I'm interested in that, and I looked into carbon fibers that may be used. So I ran into volcanic ashes fiber, which is like carbon fiber, but even greener, and literally it looks like bronze. So instead of having that kind of techie, sporty look it has, it's a different hue naturally because of the nature of the carbon. So it's carbon from volcanic ashes, and it's, I'll send you pictures too. But that I didn't have the time yet to play with it. Just like also double top, I still have rolls of the Nomex. I still haven't had the time. But I don't know, maybe I need three workbenches, not just one.
You need a whole laboratory.
I know. You're right. That'd be great. I need to sell more guitars too, like, to make that happen. Then I'll have more room.
Yes.
I'm building also a bunch of ukuleles, and those will be more traditional. I mean, with a twist. They all have the same neck, they all have the same head, they all have the same fingerboard, the same body size, except they're all a different silhouette and same materials. So it will be like a bunch of siblings or cousins. It will be a whole family of 10 with just little variations. And this, I just want to have them ready for the holidays. Every year, I'm like, I should have ukes for Christmas.
Just in
and
stock,
every
yeah.
year, I'm like, I have to start way sooner than I think.
Wow.
But I've been also designing accessories. I don't know if you've seen the Passerelle Bridge. There was a collaboration with Khaki King.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bridge in bronze. Yeah. So I'm working on a new accessory, a slide, and right now it's in prototype. So I 3D printed sculpting clay to adjust the 3D printing. So now I can modify the file, and that also will be cast in bronze. So the problem I find with the slide is the finger is always stuck on the first knuckle, and that the finger is too straight and not relaxed, and it doesn't have to be that way. If the inner wall of the tube is arched in the same radius as a relaxed finger, but the outer wall is still straight, when it touches the string, it's more comfortable. And then to offset also the thickness overall, putting the weight on one direction, it helps to have gravity being your friend when you play with it, to have more weight on one side. So it's kind of a hybrid between the slide guitar, slide that has all the weight on one direction, and also, but still wraps most of your finger like a blues slide would.
Wild. Yeah.
I mean, right now, so my problem is to find one size fit all.
Sure.
It took a while to figure out, even though Pastorelle, that floating bridge, that movable bridge, even though it looks very simple, it took a while to find the right spacing to fit most guitars and most string gauges. It took a lot of try and error to find that sweet spot that can accommodate most. Here, it's just everybody's hands are different.
Sure.
So this is based on my hand. I gave it to a friend a couple months ago, maybe a month ago. So what fit on my ring finger was only fitting on his pinky finger.
Sure.
And I don't want to start to carry like many sizes and many SKUs, and just I like one size fit all is great. It simplified my inventory.
Yeah.
But that's in the works.
It's the bowling ball plight when you go to the bowling alley. They don't all fit.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that's. But, yeah, I mean, like, this week I've been mostly making masks, so the guitars have been a bit on hold.
Sure.
But I'm running out of fabric, so I'm going to be back on guitars again.
All right. Well, I want folks to be able to follow you, which is Atelier_Rosencrantz, and I'll include a link to that in the notes for this. I would love photos. I would actually love, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if you want to do one of those little shop walkthrough videos, I think people would get a kick out of seeing whatever is in stages of progress right now, because this is all super fascinating stuff.
And how long would be those videos about?
Whatever you're comfortable with. It could be a couple minutes. I just would love to see the layout of your shop, where the mushrooms are growing, the whole thing. Yeah, it's crazy.
My shop is pretty small, but it's actually the smallest shop, but it's my favorite one. I find that since I had to make it more efficient since it was a smaller footprint.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it forced me to be more efficient. Yeah, I will totally give you a walkthrough. That'd be fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Rachel, thank you for talking to us. I can't wait to see what all awaits with this mushroom and everything else you're working on. It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, no, I can't wait to see it either, because there's so many, like... room for errors. Also with the mushroom, you have to make sure it's always, the environment is always clean and sterile for it. So I'm like, wow, this is a perfect time to do that, because like everything has been so like cleaned lately that, and you don't want the bad mushroom growing on the good mushroom, basically. So you have to keep the environment pretty well. I also found out the hard way, you can grow the kombucha leather in the same room as you're growing mushroom. The mushroom doesn't like the kombucha. I think it's changing a pH in the air. There's something that's really like not friendly to it.
You have to separate them. I love it.
You have to. The kombucha, it's tough. Like, it smells too bad. I grow it mostly at a friend's place who has a garage, but I think for the kombucha leather, I have to wait maybe after the world is too crazy to grow some more. It's just too strong of a smell.
Yeah.
And in the house. Like, I have the wood shop in my house.
Got it.
It's an old carriage house.
Mm-hmm.
The first floor is the wood shop. The top floor is the apartment. So, it's pretty great. I love just making coffee, going downstairs, and yeah, I've got the shortest commute. And right now, I feel pretty lucky that I can work from home. If I make kombucha, the whole house, that's going to be pretty difficult.
Need a ventilation system. Just for the kombucha.
Just for that.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This was super enlightening and super fun.
It was. I love talking about it. So thank you for asking.
Of course.